Some people that do AI, most of the time, they're going to put an edge detection pet, right? That mostly, the most common one is the AstroTech. They're going to put, and I really think that the price investment that you have just by putting an AstroTech, it is worth for you to know which ones show heat and which ones don't show heat. Mm-hmm. Now, I think that one of the fields that underestimate that the most is on embryo transfer. Now, you were working with so many valuable embryos. No, embryos are very expensive. It's the best genetic that you can have. You pay expensive. And sometimes they don't monitor the heat because they're going to do the embryo transfer 7 days later, right? So they just do a regular protocol and they transfer on the ones that have a CL, a corpus luteum, right?
Right, right.
But the same thing happened with embryo transfer. About 62% of your cows that display heat and receive an embryo transfer, they're going to become pregnant.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Give your cattle platinum protection with Virbac Bovagen Platinum Vaccines. Start your protection at us.virbac.com/platinum protection. Data shows most cattle don't get enough vitamin D, which can impact health and performance. High D from DSM Firmenich can help improve cattle's vitamin D status. Be proactive with Cattle Active. Visit proearthanimalhealth.com today. Lalamond Animal Nutrition offers microbial solutions to boost animal welfare and performance. Control the cortisol surge and control your drug costs on your inbound cattle. Make the 21-day SHOT Show a thing of the past with QFA 2000.
Welcome to the Beef Podcast. I'm your host, Brandi Buzzard, and it's my pleasure to bring you the latest trends and issues from the best and brightest minds in the beef industry. Today, we're joined by Dr. Cecilia Constantino-Frosha, Assistant Research Professor in Livestock Systems in the Division of Animal Sciences at the University of Missouri. Dr. Rocha earned her DVM from the Santa Catarina Federal University in Brazil and her master's from the University of Sao Paulo in Brazil, and went on to earn her PhD in animal science from the University of Florida. The focus of her laboratory is to develop estrus synchronization protocols and understand the events that happen during early pregnancy, aiming to reduce pregnancy loss in beef cattle. Her current research priorities are artificial intelligence for estrus detection in beef operations, puberty attainment in beef heifers, and artificial insemination using the gene-edited semen to optimize the development of the calf. Dr. Rocha has authored or co-authored 34 peer-reviewed publications, 45 abstracts, 2 book chapters, and 18 extension articles. She received the Wilson G. Pond Award from the American Society of Animal Science, the Burroughs Wellcome Fellowships from the Society for the Study of Reproduction, and the PhD of the Year Award from the Department of Animal Sciences in the University of Florida. As you can see, she is quite the expert in all things estrus detection and beef reproduction physiology. So I'm very excited to talk to her today about AI, and not just the AI that we are accustomed to. So it's this very timely for our spring calving listeners as we inch closer to breeding season. So Dr. Rocha, thank you so much for joining us today. How are you?
Thank you so much for having me here, Brandi. I'm very excited to be here. I always listen to your podcast and I learned a lot. So I think we're going to have a nice day today. I'm good. How about you?
I'm well. It is not raining, snowing, and the wind is not blowing in Southeast Kansas. So very happy with that.
We had some snow in Missouri yesterday. I don't know what that was, completely unexpected. I mean, I was like, it's April. It's my first winter here. So I was just, what's going on?
Yes. Snow in April and sometimes even beginning of May will happen. My birthday is at the end of April, and I can vividly remember when I was in college going sledding down a big hill in Manhattan, Kansas, because it was still icy at the end of April for my birthday. So don't, if you're a big gardener, don't plant your garden until like after the first weekend in May, just to be on the safe side.
Well, I'm glad to know I put my lettuce beginning of March and they're probably going to die out.
You might want to cover those at night if it's occasionally. But thank you for being here. And thank you also for listening to the podcast. We really appreciate that. For those of us who are, you know, for our listeners who aren't well acquainted with you or not with your work, or aren't acquainted with your work, could you just bring us up to speed on your background, how you got started in the beef and cattle industry, and just your career so far?
Yeah, sure. So as you can see from my accent, I'm not originally from the United States. I'm from Brazil. And you probably have interviewed a lot of people from Brazil in here already. I think we have a large beef industry there. We are very strong. We have a strong background in this area. So I'm originally from Brazil. I did my DVM there. So I did at Federal University of Santa Catarina. And I don't have that nice history of like, oh, my dad had a farm, my mom had a farm, we always leave it around cattle. No, I was from the city. I was from actually a big town. And then I decided that I want to do a tough job. And I was like, what can be a tough job, you know? So I wanted to be a police, work to the police, or become a vet of large animals. Oh, back in the town, that was what I had in my mind. So I started my vet school. And on the first semester, I met a very tough professor, too. I want to work with. So he worked with beef cattle reproduction. He was more on the basic side of the thing, so producing embryos, and he studied the effects that could improve in vitro production of embryos in beef cows. And I started to work with him on the first semester of my vet school, and that was when I developed my love for science, and I said, you know what? I want to work with beef cows reproduction, but I want to be a professor.
Mm-hmm.
So I started to build my whole background during my vet school to have a good curriculum to go to the grad school. And at the end of my vet school, I already had like paper publications. I had a lot of abstract presentations and attend a lot of conferences. So I went and I did my final internship, because when you do your vet school in Brazil, you need to do 6 months of internship with like hands-on activities, right?
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So I did this last 6 months at the University of São Paulo, where I met my master's advisor. So I went there, I worked with him, he liked me, I liked his research area, which was back in the time, Dr. Guilherme Pugliese.
Okay.
And then we worked, he invited me over to do my master, and I started my master in 2017 in beef cattle reproduction. But then I moved more to the applied side of the things. So
okay.
I work a lot with Doppler ultrasonography. And for those of you that are not familiar, the Doppler ultrasound is like a regular ultrasound that you put on your cattle, but it gives you in color signals the blood flow of any structure that you put. So
it has
red and blue color, and that's telling you how much blood is coming to that organ or to that tissue.
Oh, wow. That's very cool.
Yeah, it's very nice. And it was a cutting edge research back on that time. I mean, 2017. So we were using that to look at the blood perfusion of the corpus luteum. So the corpus luteum is a structure that is creating the ovary after the ovulation of the cow. Mm-hmm. And we were able to see, so the corpus luteum is responsible to produce progesterone, right? And progesterone, for those of you that don't know, and if you want to remember for the rest of your life, you just need to remember progestation, right? So progesterone is the hormone of the pregnancy.
I like that word trick, progest. I wish someone had told me that when I was in my advanced repro classes, progesterone, progestation. I will never forget that now.
Yes. Every time I'm teaching someone, I say progesterone is progestation, right? So it's the hormone that's responsible for the pregnancy and is produced by the corpus luteum. So back in that time, we would look how active was that corpus luteum or how functional it was, which means it was producing more progesterone by the amount of blood flow. Right. And then we use that as a technique for our early pregnancy diagnosis. So nowadays with the B-mode ultrasound, that's the regular ultrasound, you can just do a preg check on your cows 30 days after AI. And we were able to using the Doppler to do 20 days after AI. So that, if you think of the estrous cycle of a cow, is about 21 days. We were able to diagnose that the cow was not pregnant before she showed heat. And that's a technique that nowadays in Brazil, it's very common. It's not very common here in the United States, but there are some people that being studied that. I know that Dr. Pedro Fontes at University of Georgia, I have done some things, but it's still the beginning of the technique here yet.
Mm-hmm.
But so that's what I did on my master, right? During my master, I moved abroad. I went to England and I spent 6 months in England.
Oh, my goodness.
I've been all over. I'm used to say that for 7 years, my whole life was just two luggages because I have to travel so much.
Yeah.
When I got to the United States, I was like, okay, now I can buy some pictures for my wall. I can have some decorations and stuff. Yeah, so I moved to England. I did 6 months of my master in England. And there I worked more with the trying to find some biomarkers on the blood of the cows that also could be used as a pregnancy diagnosis. Mm-hmm. And I was also more thinking about the United States system, other systems where, because in Brazil, we have a lot of vet schools. So vet service is very easy to find. And you can do this Doppler ultrasound very quick. No, it's easy, it's cheap. Now, here in the United States or in Europe, it's not very easy to find vets, you know, and it's an expensive service. So we were trying to find some blood markers that the producer could just collect a blood sample and diagnose the pregnancy on day 20, the same way as the Doppler, but with a on-shoot test, you know, just trying to find some blood markers that we could do. But unfortunately, we could not find anything that had a good accuracy. So I ended up with that. So that was my master. And then at the end of my master, I got invited to come to Florida. And I got a scholarship and I moved to the University of Florida to do my PhD.
Well, moving from, that is a lot. And going from London, though, to Florida, that must have been quite the shock. And also going from Brazil, where you said that there's a lot of vet services, like a lot of veterinarians, because there's a lot of vet schools. And then you went to London, where there's not as many. And then down to Florida, where I'm assuming there are, but is the number in proximity to where you're at in Florida similar to Brazil, or still fewer in Florida?
Oh, it's still fewer in Florida. I can see that, like, people just begging for vets. I feel that a lot of people that go to vet school, they want to work with small animals and horses, so that you have enough vet for that. But for cattle, no, mm-hmm. you don't have, you know. So my advisor at the University of Florida was Mario Binelli. His appointment was research and extension. Mm-hmm. And part of his extension program was just trying to help the little amount of vet that we had there to do vet service. So we would provide some vet services as well and try to help, because one of the reasons why ranchers were not investing in technology was simply because they did not have the technical option. They didn't have the technical service available, you know. So like, oh, why don't you preg check your cows? Well, because I don't have a vet that can do that.
We have, there's quite a few, like where we live, there's a handful of beef veterinarians nearby. But we have the opposite where we live, is the horse veterinarians are much fewer and further between where we live. There's lots of small animals, of course, but the horse is harder to find, but lots of beef cattle, that's where we're at. So it's just interesting how that changes, you know, geographically, how that can be so very different.
Yeah.
Before we dive into AI and AI, the different kinds, I know I've already learned so much from you, but I know that when I was in grad school or before I got to college, like with my undergrad, I didn't realize that estrus and estrus were the same thing, but different. And so if you could provide to our audience who possibly maybe didn't realize that also, that there is the estrus cycle and then there is estrus as part of the cycle, I think that would be really valuable before we dive into these different things that we're going to talk about, the different sync protocols and estrus expression. I think that would be valuable to our audience. So could you briefly kind of just clarify that for everyone? Because I know that you'll do a much more thorough and credible job than I will.
Yes, sure. And that's very important, because still with now for my graduate students, I still need to explain to them that we have two words, right? We have the estrus word and then we have the estrus cycle word. And they have completely different meanings, right? So the estrous cycle of the cow is like the same thing as the menstrual cycle for the women, right? So it is a period where we have different time points. So we're going to have the diestrous or the metestrous, the proestrous, and the estrous. So there's four different periods. And the whole estrous cycle of the cow is going to last 21 days in average. So this is the moment that the cow is going to have her follicle, or what we also call the egg, growing and get prepared until she ovulates to get it fertilized. So that's the estrous cycle of the cow. There's different stages. There's different moments. During one of the stages of that estrous cycle of the cow is the estrus. That's when the cow show heat, right? So we say other expressions when we see like, oh, there's some cows riding each other, or you can see the cow that's accepting being mounted. That's the cow that's in heat. So this is the estrus of the cow. And that's just one time point of the whole estrus cycle, right? The estrus normally take about 12 hours on the cow. And when the cow starts to display estrus, it is the beginning of a new estrus cycle for her. She's going to ovulate about 24 hours later, and that's going to be a new estrus cycle for her. Now, something that's very important, and sometimes ranchers don't understand, is you are walking on your pasture, right? And you're just looking at your cows, and you see one cow mounting on top of the other. They need to understand which one is in heat, which one is in estrus, right? Is the one that's mounting or is the one that's quiet and accepting being mounted?
Right.
So the one that's mounting, she's not in heat. She's not in estrus. She just has some attitude. the one that's quiet and is like peaceful there, accepting being mounted, that's the one that's showing heat or showing estrus that we call, right? So that's the one that's starting a new cycle.
Yes.
So basically two different things, right? One is the whole 21 days of the cow, that's the estrus cycle, and the other one is just the action of the cow of showing some behaviors of being receptive to the bull. That's the estrus.
Perfect. Well, thank you for clarifying that, because I remember it's when you're reading it on paper, it's much more clear. But like when you're having a discussion like we are, or when you're talking to someone and you're saying estrus cycle, estrus, and you go back and forth, it can be difficult to keep track of that. And so I just appreciate you clarifying that for us, because it can be tricky if you kind of get lost in the discussion. So now that we're kind of on that topic, what if you've kind of spoke about it already, what the importance is of estrus and cow-calf operations, but why is precision in estrus detection important?
Yeah. So like going back to the just detection of estrus, how much that is important. I think people sometimes underestimate how important it is a cow showing estrus on your operation, a cow or a heifer at any time point. You know, so let's say again, you were just walking on your pasture and you're looking at your cows and you see a cow showing heat or showing estrus. I'm going to say showing heat because most of the people know by that word.
That's probably helpful. Yes.
So you see a cow showing heat. She's accepting being mounted. What do you do with that information? 99% of the time is you don't do anything. You're just like, hey, she showed heat. I know there are some cows riding each other. But you can do so many things with that information if you're able to monitor and understand. So, for example, you have your heifers, right? Your virgin heifers. Breeding season didn't start yet. They are about 9-10 months of age. If you see some of those heifers already showing heat, those are the heifers that you want to keep in your operation, because that means that heifer is already cyclic. While some heifers are not pubertal yet, so they are not ready to be bred. So if you're riding around your heifers and you see one showing heat before the breeding season starts, keep track of that, because that's a heifer that you want to keep, right? Or if you are 60 or you're 30, 35 days postpartum on your calving season and you see one of your cows already showing heat, that's also a cow that you want to keep on your operation.
Yeah.
Keep that in mind, because she already returned your cyclicity 35 days postpartum. And some people just ignore when they see that, right?
No, she's just
right?
Ready to go. Yeah.
They just consider heat important when they're doing an artificial insemination. That's the only moment. And not even that. Sometimes they don't even care about that in that moment. Now, another moment that's important. Let's say you're during the breeding season, right? Your cows are with bulls. And you're seeing cows showing heat and the bull is not mounting her. Well, there is something wrong with your bull. Right? Or even if you like, you took out your bull and she's showing heat, that means that she's open, right? Mm-hmm. So there's so many good information that you can take out from monitoring the heat of your cows that sometimes people underestimate. But my favorite one is, I always joke with the ranchers, because on the position that I am right now at the University of Missouri, I have extension and research. So when I do a lot of on-farm research, I go to the ranchers and on the day of AI, and we always put the estrus patch, the estrus detection patch, and I can see how many cows showed heat, how many cows did not show heat. And I say, do you want me to tell you what's going to be your pregnancy by artificial insemination before I even preg check? I can tell you just by looking how many cows show heat. Uh-huh. I'm like, oh, that's impossible. I said, well, If your seeming is fine, you don't have any problem with seeming. You don't have any problem with your AI technician. You have a good AI technician. Your cows are in good body condition score. You can calculate that 60% of your cows that show heat are going to become pregnant, and 20% of your cows that do not show heat are going to become pregnant. So you just calculate that percentage, and that's what you have.
I've never heard that before. 60% of your cows that show heat will become pregnant, and 20% of your cows that don't show heat will become pregnant.
Exactly.
Our audience can't see me, but you can. But I've been like writing notes while we've been recording this of all the things that you've been saying. So I'm adding that to my little scrap of paper here. 60% of showing heat, 20% non-showing. That's, I'm going to have to like do the math on that on our herd and look at that. That's, I'd never heard that before.
So if you want to see everything, if everything goes well, like if you don't have that, yeah, there is some problem. Either your AI tech is something wrong, or your seeming is not of a good quality. Something is wrong, you know, because that's what you're supposed to expect. So let's say you are in a herd that you have 100 cows. And normally you're going to have a rate of heat expression about 50, 60%, right? So let's say 50% of your cows, they become pregnant. So if you calculate here, if 50% of your cows show heat, 50% of them show heat, and then 6% of them are going to become pregnant, that's 30 cows, right?
Right.
And then the other 50, they don't show heat. And out of those, 20% are going to become pregnant. So that's 10 cows, okay? So you should expect from your herd of 100 animals to have 50% of them pregnant. That's what's expected on a protocol for tissue insemination.
Okay. Wow.
So optimum herds that have a very good body condition score and everything, they're going to have 65-25%. That's also expected. But I like it to say that because why? Because let's say you have your most expensive seeming, right? And you have other seeming. Where are you going to put that? On your cows that show heat?
Yeah, of course. Yes, absolutely. You want to get the most bang for your buck, basically, out of it. Bang for your, yeah.
They are most likely to become pregnant than cows that do not show heat.
Yeah, I mean, that makes perfect sense.
And that's some people that do AI, most of the time, they're going to put a estrus detection pet, right? That mostly, the most common one is the Estrotec. They're going to put, and I really think that the price investment that you have just by putting an Estrotec, it is worth for you to know which ones show heat and which ones don't show heat. Now, I think that one of the fields that underestimate that the most is on embryo transfer. Now, you are working with so many valuable embryos. Embryos are very expensive. It's the best genetic that you can have. You pay expensive. And sometimes they don't monitor the heat because they're going to do the embryo transfer 7 days later, right? So they just do a regular protocol and they transfer on the ones that have a CL, a corpus luteum, right?
Right.
But the same thing happened with embryo transfer. About 60-62% of your cows that display heat and receive an embryo transfer, they're going to become pregnant.
Okay.
20% of the cows that do not show heat and receive an embryo transfer are going to become pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
So if you had just a tag on your cows now, right, on the tail to see which ones show heat or not, you can also transfer the most expensive embryos to them.
Yes. That makes perfect sense when you break it down like that, for sure.
And I didn't talk about the precision, right? I just talked about the issues and didn't talk about the
precision. Okay. You can talk about, you can do the precision. We can talk about precision. I also wanted to talk about if there's a variation in expression of estrus among cows.
That's a tough question, you know, because in dairy cows, there is a lot of studies trying to understand that. Mm-hmm. If the way that the cow express heat, her behaviors during the heat expression are going to affect the pregnancy.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, they found that there is a difference in expression. So mostly when you measure with artificial intelligence devices like pedometers or accelerometers, it's easier for you to see difference in behavior because there is a computer monitoring 24 hours a day for you what the cow is doing. And they see that cows that they have a more, let's put this way, a more active heat. So they walk more, they accept being mounted more, those cows, they are more likely to become pregnant.
Okay.
Now, in grazing beef cows, that's much harder to do, right? Okay. Because you basically need to stay 24 hours on the pasture, looking at the heat signs. And 90% of the times that pasture does not have a light on, those cows right. are wild. They are running away from you.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit harder to understand. But we did some studies like that at the University of Florida during my PhD. And we are also running some studies here at the University of Missouri now. And I have some preliminary data that I can share with you on what we have observed. It looks like that for the grazing beef cow is a little bit different. There are differences. There are some cows that are going to be more active. They accept more to be mounted. They walk more. They stop to eat more because they are just focused on showing the heat. And there are other cows that are going to be more less active. They're going to be less receptive. But it looks out like that different than the dairy cow, what we see is the opposite. So grazing beef cows that are less active, that show heat, they show heat, but that heat is not very intense. They're still eating, they walk, but they don't walk too much. They accept being mouth, but they don't accept being mouth so much. Those are the ones more likely to become pregnant.
So it is associated with pregnancy.
It
for
is
sure.
associated with pregnancy for sure. Now, it looks like that in the dairy cow, that's a cow that's confined, that she doesn't spend a lot of energy. As much activity she does, better it is for her pregnancy. But for the grazing beef cow, it's the opposite. We want her to don't spend too much energy to show heat, but not so intense, because then otherwise she's going to spend too much energy and that's not going to be good for her pregnancy.
Right.
So to answer your question, yes, there is variation among cows on estrus expression. Just by on your eyes, it is hard to detect this variation in grazing beef cows because you are not monitoring them 24 hours a day. And this variation is associated with pregnancy.
So we can go back to your precision, because earlier I asked you why is precision and estrus detection important? And you were giving me that wonderful formula, you know, the ratio. But do you want to expound upon the precision part?
Yes.
Okay.
So probably most of people that hear to the podcast, they're familiar with, for example, using split time the eye or synchronization protocols, estrus synchronization protocols, where you are going to do AI based on heat. And there is a reason for that. It's just to increase your precision on heat expression, right? So you're going to try to do your artificial insemination as close to the time that the cow showed the heat as possible.
Mm-hmm.
But again, when we're talking about beef cows that are in a grazing system, this is very hard, right? Because from 10 p.m. until 6 a.m., you are sleeping. You are not checking heat. And so let's say that you go to check your Estrotec patch score, if it's activated or not, at 9 p.m., which is very rare. Not all the ranchers are going to do that. Most of them are going to go the last time at 6 p.m. But let's say that you are a very nice rancher and you invest in technology and you go at 9 p.m. and you're going to check. And the patch is not activated, right? Then you go at 6 a.m., check again, and the patch is activated. When that patch was activated? At 11 p.m. or at 4 a.m.? You don't know.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
That's like hours and hours of difference. So when I was at the University of Florida, we were doing a very intense study and we were like, we need to be precise because this study, we always did everything based on heat. So like we can't just don't know what time the heat was happening.
Right.
So we implemented in our cows one thing that's what we call accelerometers. Okay. So they are on that time, they were a collar that you put on the neck of the cows. And that collar monitored during the 24 hours of the day, the rumination of the cow and the activity of the cow.
Yes.
So every time the cow had a peak in activity and a drop in rumination, that cow would be considered in heat.
Okay.
Those accelerometers, they were known to be used in dairy operations, but we decided to take the heat, the risk and validate it for beef cows and do that. Well, so then when you have the accelerometer, you don't have to go to the pasture all the time because you have monitoring for you 24 hours a day when that cow is displaying heat.
Yeah.
And we saw, I don't have the numbers on top of my mind right now, but I think it was like about 40% of the cows that we would see the AstroTech activated, which means our fluorescence at 6 a.m. They actually show heat at midnight, 11 a.m.
Yeah.
So then what we decided to do was back on the time we were using embryo transfer and not artificial insemination.
Mm-hmm.
So we decided to do our embryo transfer based on the onset of the heat of the estrus that the accelerometer detects. So for those of you that are not familiar, the accelerometer, they almost work like a smartwatch. So, you know, you have your smartwatch and you go to the gym and you want to see how many calories you spend and how many steps you have done. Mm-hmm. Cows also have a smartwatch. And then in that smartwatch, we can see when they show heat, right? And I think that's just amazing how artificial intelligence can help us nowadays.
Yes.
So, yeah, so then we use this smartwatch of the cow to know exactly when they would show heat. And then we would transfer an embryo, different than the traditional embryo transfer protocol. The embryo transfer would be 12 hours within 12 hours of difference from the onset of heat. So let me try to explain. So she had show heat at 11 p.m., right? I would transfer an embryo 7 days later from 11 p.m. to 11 a.m. No more than that, in that interval.
Yeah.
Which means my embryo transfer wasn't just one single day. I would do within a 3 days interval because one cow would show heat today, another cow would show heat tomorrow, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
We used vitrified embryos. And when we did this, we got 62% of pregnancy by embryo transfer.
Oh, wow. That's massive. That's so successful.
Yes. And then what we did was some cows were not able to get on the smartwatch, right? She wasn't positive for heat. So these cows, we had to transfer embryo based on the AstroTech.
Mm-hmm.
And so AstroTech is amazing. It's a nice tool, but you can't monitor at night.
Right.
On the cows that we transferred on the AstroTech, our pregnancy rate was, I have it right here, it was 36%.
Oh, okay.
So
that's a big difference.
Of difference. And that is just precision in estrus detection. You know, all those cows, they show heat.
Yeah.
All those were positive for heat. But in one group, we transfer exactly based on when she starts showing heat using the accelerometer or smartwatch, as you want to call it. While the other ones, we didn't have too much precision because we had to sleep, right? We had a life.
Right, so, yes.
So we dropped the pregnancy by 30% just by not having a precision on estrus detection. So it is important to detect heat, but when you want to have good results, you need to also have precision.
So
that's why I tell ranchers sometimes, if you don't want to invest in artificial intelligence, you got to go to the pasture at least 4 or 5 times a day to be sure when that cow starts showing heat.
Right. So that when we're speaking about artificial intelligence, we're using that in reference to the accelerometer, the smartwatch, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So are there other ways that you see that artificial intelligence can be used in breeding strategies, you know, estrusync, things like that? Are there other ways that you see that could happen?
Yes, I think there is like so many ways that can happen. So now I think in the industry, we have 3 types of artificial intelligence that we can use in beef cows. The pedometer, which basically it is literally, in this case, it's a smartwatch. You just put on the arm of the cow and you let her there and it's going to just count the number of steps. And then you assume when she's walking too much and she's in heat. We also had some other thing that's called a heat watch. The heat watch, you glue to the tail of the cow, and then every time, and it has like a bottom on the top tail, and every time another cow mounts, it activates and then sends the information to the computer, and the computer is going to tell you that cow is in heat. So those two, they are very good tools to detect heat, to detect when the cow is in heat, basically. And then we have the accelerometers. Well, the accelerometers, they monitor rumination and activity. So those are secondary signs of heat, right? So that it is when the cow is in heat, she's going to first accept being mounted. And then after a while, she's going to increase her activity because she wants to be mounted by other cows. And she's going to stop her rumination because she doesn't want to eat. She just wants to have other cows riding her, right? So those are secondary signs of heat. In the accelerometer, I think there is more advantage to that because a cow doesn't stop ruminating just when she's in heat. A cow stops ruminating when she's about to calve, so you can monitor your calving moment. A cow stops ruminating when she's sick, so you can also monitor when you have cows that are sick. And I think that the new technologies, they also are able to monitor temperature and panting behavior. So when you have a cow in heat stress or when you have cows that are with fever, you can monitor that too. So their whole claim is that you were able to detect a disease that's happening in the cow or the calving moment earlier than you would be able to see with your eyes, for example.
Right.
And then we have the last thing that is not, there is nothing to do with artificial insemination. That's the virtual fences, right? That's another artificial intelligence technology. That's
very yes. Cool. Oh, yeah.
And,
yeah.
I mean, they are all new things. So when you think about it, it is a lot of investment, but it is a long-term investment that might help the rancher to monitor better their herd.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of opportunities with virtual fencing for like rotational, like, if you're on a rotational grazing program and you're trying to keep cattle off of a certain part of a pasture, like a riparian area, or you really want cattle to go graze this one particular area to help get some of the, you know, an early forage grazed before it gets too rough or something like that. I think there's a lot of value there, an opportunity there for virtual fencing. And I've never thought of it being a form of artificial intelligence. I mean, it is. I've just never thought of it that way. And the same goes with the pedometers and the accelerometers that you were speaking about. I never thought of those as a form of artificial intelligence, but it is. That's exactly what it is. So that's all just so fascinating to hear those different ways. And I cannot get over the ratio that you were sharing about the 60% of the cattle that show heat and the 20% that don't show. I will not forget that anytime soon. I just love that.
It's time for our famous three.
Everyone knows vitamin D affects bone formation, immunity, and growth. What everyone doesn't know is research shows cattle don't get enough vitamin D. High D from DSM Firmenich optimizes health and growth with a more bioavailable form of vitamin D. And data shows high D fed heifers weighed over 8 pounds more at weaning. Don't let your cattle be vitamin deficient. Meet the growing needs of your herd year-round with high D. Learn more at dsm-firmenich.com/hy-d.
We have reached the point in the podcast where we ask the same, closing questions to each of our guests. And I did give Dr. Rocha these in advance so that she could think about them. So the first one is, what is your favorite beef or cattle related resource? It could be a book or a person, a website. It could be could be a coworker, a TV show. You know, what's your favorite beef or cattle-related resource?
I as I said to you, listen to this podcast very often, and I know that Dr. Angela Gonella told about the Beef Reproductive Task Force, which is a very good resource. And I work with beef cattle a lot in reproduction, so I like that. But you know, we're in a new era right now where there's so many fake news about the beef industry. We are under so much scrutiny and attack that we are the whole reason of greenhouse effects and so on. That there is one book that I read and I strongly recommend to everyone. That's called Sacred Cow.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite books. And I think it makes you understand the whole beef industry. It's not just about reproduction. Because at the end, if you want to be productive, you know, it's not just about reproduction or nutrition. It's everything together. So I strongly recommend everyone to read that book.
Yes, I have not read it, but I have seen like expert excerpts and like graphs and things like that. And I think it's just very fascinating. There's a lot of really, really good points in it that I've seen like kind of summarized, but it's on my to be read list, which grows longer and longer. Okay. So on the flip side of that coin, what is your favorite non-beef or cattle book or one you're reading right now?
So I try to read a lot of like personal development books so I can be a better advisor and a better professional. I don't know if it's working. Let's see. And my favorite book is called The Originals. So I don't know if you've ever heard about it, but it's a book where they explain, they got one of, most of the famous people that became like very influential and rich, like the guy that invented Microsoft, for example. And they explain that those people, they are not just someone special. The difference between them and us is that the amount of ideas that they produce, like, so the amount of work that they created, and basically one of those worked out, you know, like, so it's like they also failed several times before they succeed. So I think that's very important. It teaches you ways to be creative and to have nice ideas. And I think that's one of my favorite books.
I think that's just so important, the different ways that we achieve things. And I don't read a lot of books like that because they tend to make me feel like I'm not succeeding enough in life. And so, but I do admire people who read those and take a lot from them and can apply that. So that's one I'll have to put on my Amazon, like, the save for later list. So the save for later, the read list. So thank you for sharing that with us. And I think that's really admirable that, you know, you're reading to make yourself better for other people. I think that's a lot of value in that.
Yeah, I think I got where I got just because I had some amazing advisors guiding me. I never had any problem with any advisor. They were always amazing people. And I want to be this person for my students as well.
I think that's really important. Not every advisor thinks like that, you know, not every professor is that way. And so that's just really valuable. And I hope that your students appreciate that, the effort that you're putting in. Okay. And so the last one is, when you think of someone you admire or look up to, what is a characteristic they possess that's led them to be successful? And again, it doesn't have to be, you don't have to tell us the person if you don't want to, just the characteristic.
Well, I think that the person that I admire the most now, it is my PhD advisor. My PhD advisor was Dr. Mario Binelli. And I really admire his empathy to try to understand that no one is the same, you know, like my level of productivity, your level of productivity is different. The way that things work are different. You know, some people like to work in the morning. Some people like to work in the afternoon. And he probably doesn't remember that, but I will never forget. He gave me a task one day. It was a huge experiment to run. And he always said, Cecilia, this is the experiment of my life, so you better do it right. And I had to, I was the leader of the experiment, and I had, I don't know, like 20 people under myself. And then I came to him and said, how do you think I am at delegating functions? How do you think I am as a leader? I want your advice. And then he said, oh, I think you are just not delegating it well. You're just still doing everything by yourself and not letting people taking the lead. And I said, oh, I'm sorry, but I just think that people sometimes are not very proactive. I was expecting them to be more proactive. And then he looked at me and said, Cecilia, proactivity is something very relative. And I was like, really? And he's like, yeah. What you think is be proactive, some people think it's being invasive. Other people think that they shouldn't do because it's impolite. So you need to understand that every people function in a different way. And that just sticks with me for the rest of my life. And I'm like, yeah. So I always admire his empathy. He's an amazing human. And he understands that people function different. And that's very important.
That is so valuable to think, you know, like proactive, because empathy is really important, you know, putting yourself in other people's shoes. I think that's vitally important. And I think that in agriculture, we maybe need to improve upon that a little bit. But to think about that proactivity looks different for other people because they don't, you know, what you just said, they don't want to seem too forward or something. I had never thought of it that way. That's what a wonderful mindset to have.
Yeah. I didn't have anything transferred to him. I was just, yes. Now I understand. Now everything makes sense.
Absolutely. Well, you have to tell him about, share the episode with him so he can listen to the nice things that you said. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Rocha. That is all the questions that we have, you know, for time allotted. I could sit and talk to you about AI and estrus sink and, artificial intelligence and the other artificial insemination, both AIs. We could talk about that for a long time, and we'll have to have you back on the podcast so we can talk about your advising and your teaching side of things that you do instead of just the research part, because I know that you have a wide variety of responsibilities. But before we get to that, if listeners have any questions for you or want to learn more about our discussion today, you know, where can they do that?
So there's several ways to reach me out. The first one is where I work. That's the research center here. We have a Facebook webpage. It's called the Southwest Research Extension Education Center from University of Missouri. So you can go to the Facebook and you're going to always see news about myself and my research. You can also reach me out by email. My email is cecilia.constantinorocha@missouri.edu. And I just want to enjoy this opportunity to let everyone know that we are just launching right now this week a series of videos of 1 to 2 minutes. It's like a Reels on Instagram, Reels on Facebook.
Oh, great.
Where we're going to just talk about science. So every month I'm picking a paper that's relevant for the ranchers. And for 1 minute, I'm going to talk about the main finds of that paper and how they can use those scientific finds to improve their operation.
So oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah, so if you follow our Southwest Center page, you're going to be able to find those videos that are going to be released on the 10th of each month. And then you can hear more about my research there.
That's wonderful. I'm putting that in for our listening audience who may not be on your computer or something like that. I have put those things in the show notes so you can scroll. I put the Southwest Research Extension and Education Center for University of Missouri on Facebook there. And then they also have a website, and then you'll be able to look them up on Instagram soon. That's wonderful. And I also put I typed in your email as well, Dr. Rocha, so people could reach out to you that way as well. So thank you for sharing that. Again, I just want to thank you for being here. I have really enjoyed speaking with you. You see my sticky note here. I have it down there with some of my notes. But thank you again for being here. And to our audience, thank you for tuning in. And we will meet you back here next week on the Beef Podcast.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with Elite Remote Talent without a time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on your $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.